News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The U.S. Supreme Court hearings on President Obama's Affordable Care Act were all over the news last week, with supporters and opponents of the law scrutinizing every word the justices uttered to discern what it might mean for their side. The hearings were also closely watched in New Hampshire, where the state legislature and the governor's office have been in a long tussle over the health care law. Last year, House lawmakers wanted the attorney general to join the multi-state lawsuit against the act, whose challenge the high court heard last week. But the AG's office declined. Also, lawmakers approved legislation aimed at the Affordable Care Act's mandate that everyone purchase coverage. It says no Granite Stater can be required to buy insurance or fined because they didn't buy it. Then this year, the State House voted to return $300,000 to the federal government, saying no thanks to money for healthcare exchanges where consumers comparison shop for coverage. But along with all this criticism, the law's supporters in the state haven't been silent. They've issued reports and held news conferences about the many benefits they say it's already brought to New Hampshire. Today in The Exchange, it's a Granite State roundtable on the Affordable Care Act, where this law stands here amid the huge national discussion over it. Let's hear from you two. Has this law affected you yet? If so, in what way? What do you think its impact might be on you, your family, or your business in the future? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page. We have four guests this hour with us in studio. Lisa Girton, president of Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield in New Hampshire. Lisa, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Happy to be here.
Also with us, Lucy Hodder, an attorney with Rath, Young, and Pignatelli, who advises healthcare providers. And Lucy, welcome back.
Thank you.
Also with us, Bob Clegg, a former Republican state senator and founder of the New Hampshire Small Business and Small Industry Association. And Bob Clegg, good to see you. Thank you for
good
being here.
Good to see you.
Also with us, Dr. Travis Harker, president-elect of the New Hampshire Medical Society and a primary care physician in Concord. And Dr. Harker, thank you for making the time.
Thank you.
Well, all of you, I'm guessing you all followed the news of the Supreme Court hearings last week. It was everywhere. Some of the talk and the analysis afterwards. And Lucy, to you first, I think, your thoughts on what came out of those hearings?
Well, I think every time the national debate is raised to a level where everybody's tuning in, it's good for all of us, especially on something as important as healthcare. It's important to remember that there are two major issues, which is Congress have the authority to solve the healthcare problem by requiring people who otherwise wouldn't purchase insurance to purchase it? And really what the undertext for that is who is responsible for paying for health care for those who don't otherwise purchase it? Is it the employers? Is it the rest of the taxpayers? Is it the payers? Is it the providers? The other big issue was, does Congress have the authority to make the states add more people to the Medicaid rolls? And both of those issues are a very compelling discussion about when can government tell people what to do and regulate a national problem, and when do the people involved have to figure it out for themselves? The same debate is going on in New Hampshire. Who is responsible? How do you solve the problem? What leadership can leadership do to make things happen so that we can reduce the cost of health care? And I think it's a debate that is not going to end in June, and it's going to keep going, and we're all going to be in it.
Really, not end in June, even though once they hand down that big decision.
I think we're going to have we'll have the mandate and we are going to have to implement it and figure out how to make sure that people access health care and it's still affordable and it's still available, or we won't have the mandate and we're going to have to figure out a different solution.
Well, and Dr. Hark, I'm interested to hear from you because here you are in the trenches, you know, doing your daily work, taking care of patients, and yet there's this huge national debate going on. And I wonder what your thoughts are after those hearings last week.
Well, I think the Affordable Care Act created a lot of certainty in where we're moving forward, and the whole debate at the Supreme Court is casting a bunch of uncertainty, and so people aren't sure how we're going to be able to move in the future. The Affordable Care Act aligned a lot of incentives to bring finance and delivery into achieving certain goals on improving health care, improving the health of the population, and flattening or lowering costs, and I think with this happening in the Supreme Court, there's a lot of uncertainty about how we can respond, how we can change our practice, with patients and how we can improve the care that we deliver.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say that we're already starting to realize some of the benefits of the Affordable Care Act, and I'm wondering if those are going to go away. And some of those benefits are the elimination of pre-existing clauses, elimination of lifetime limits, bringing evidence-based preventive services to all of our citizens. And I'm worried that if the Supreme Court takes part of this out or throws the whole act out, that it's going to be bad for patients in New Hampshire.
And I'd love to hear from you too, Lisa Girton, again, president of Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield in New Hampshire. Insurers watched this with a close eye, didn't they?
Absolutely. We are in the thick of implementing. I think we're also focused on what will happen in 2014, that it's easy to forget that we've actually been in the thick of making changes and implementing now for 2 years. Really, there were some requirements that took effect immediately upon passage of the federal health care reform law, and those have been in place for several years now, expanding coverage for dependents to age 26 and making sure that no cost share applied to preventive services, changing the way we do external reviews. And this year, we're focusing up on things like changing our summaries of benefits to the standard form. And of course, the big changes are still in front of us with the 2014 exchanges and essential health benefits. And we are moving as definitively as we can, considering that there still are many things that have to be defined either by HHS or by the state.
So it's a tricky place that you're in now, right, Lisa? Because you're kind of moving forward. You got to change all the forms and you know, change your policies and so forth. And yet it could all be for naught.
That's true. I think the looming possibility of repeal certainly introduces some uncertainty. But even without that, there are still things that must be defined in order for us to really know how things will operate and what we need to do differently in 2014.
Well, and Bob Clegg again with the New Hampshire Small Business and Small Industry Association. Your thoughts on what came out of the Supreme Court? What did you especially hear from those hearings last week?
Well, what we heard was that government doesn't really have the authority to tell us that we have to purchase something. And that's a big fear with small business. If they can tell us that we have to purchase health insurance for our employees, what's next? Do they tell us what suppliers we use? Do they tell us we can't do business with certain companies? We're worried that government has reached in too far into our pocket and into our business model. As Lisa just said, when you listen to her, it's been government that's created the problems that the insurance companies can't resolve. It started when we decided that your divorced spouse was entitled to remain on your health insurance, even if you no longer worked for that company. Then we decided that children up to the age of 26 should stay on your health benefits. What we did was we created the situation where health insurance got too expensive because the most healthy weren't carrying it. And you got to the point where the whole idea of not having insurance but being able to walk into an office and say, now that I'm sick, I have a cancer diagnosis, you have to cover me. That's what's created the problem. And all of those problems were precipitated by government sticking their nose in where it didn't belong. Prior to government trying to fix something, businesses were working fine. We had good relationships with our insurance companies. We had good health programs and we didn't have the situation. We don't need government coming in and saying, oh, here's a mandate. Romney Care in Massachusetts is a perfect example of how it doesn't work. They've put companies out of business, and there are still people in Massachusetts who refuse to purchase the insurance, and the fines are big. And also in Massachusetts, some companies have figured out that if they offer a plan, it stops them from getting fined. However, the plan is so basic or bare that the people who have them are considered to be uninsured. So now those low-wage earners still have to buy a policy or pay a fine. So government's not helping. They're just making it worse.
So you're saying all these mandates, Bob, have driven up the cost, and that's the problem here.
Well, I don't think—
So government's the problem here, not the solution?
But I think there are certain mandates. We tell the insurance companies, here's what we want covered, and of course they set their rates based on coverage. We don't want an insurance plan that doesn't cover heart attacks or obesity-related diseases or cancer. We need basic coverage for all of those things because otherwise they fall upon the taxpayer on Medicare or Medicaid. So I think the problem with the mandates is telling us who we have to insure and how we have to do it.
Well, lots more to talk about. Let me invite our listeners to join us as well at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And first up is Karen in Sugar Hill. Hi, Karen. You're on the air. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your time.
Go ahead, Karen.
Well, I'm a pharmacist of long standing, 36 years, both of retail and hospital. And these are the areas that are so important to me. People wait too long when they don't have health care, and I think it's very nearsighted of us to think that preventative care isn't needed immediately. You can't wait until there's a problem, and over again, people would come to the hospital when things were more than expensive and not needed to be expensive if they'd been addressed early, but they had no money. I also see in retail people taking great advantage of the system and saying, well, you know, coming in for every little thing, and it's important to know that you can't abuse the system, and there's ways to abuse it. I see it every day. I have four boys. I want them to know that, yes, health care should be a right, but a privilege, it's something you have to pay for. And by having it available to them, now all over 26, and yes, I am proud to say that they take care of themselves. In the instance of my 26-year-old, who is a bipolar, who went and was able to take care of a situation before it came too big and cost us and me more money. They need to know that health care is a cost.
So, Karen, let me ask you a question. It's great to hear from you, since you said you spent 36 years as a pharmacist. Yeah. So it seems like, on the one hand, you feel like people wait too long to get care, and then they have, you know, horrible conditions that could have been treated better up front. But then on the other side, you see people who are insured kind of abusing that privilege and going to the doctor for a hangnail?
Yes, exactly.
Wow. All right, Karen, thanks a lot for calling in. You know, this is a real interesting point. I wonder what you think, Lisa Girton, real quickly. She's seeing sort of both sides of this, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. And I think she's right in many ways. We, as a nation, have not engaged as consumers in shopping for healthcare services the way we do for almost everything else. And I think our industry has been part of that. If you have a $5 copay, there's no reason you should be or would be sensitive to the cost variations that are out there. And I think there's a bit of a moral hazard. They say we behave differently when spending somebody else's money. So I think what's emerging is not only plan designs that engage people as consumers because of their out-of-pocket expenses, but also tools to help them know what cost differences are.
I'm so sorry, I've got to cut you off there, and
no
we will
problem.
Pick it up right after a short break. Stay with us.
Good morning, it's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members. Support also comes to us from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. And Laconia Savings Bank, committed to being New Hampshire's local bank, and proud to announce its new banking center at 705 Hooksett Road in Manchester, laconiasavings.com. More of our Granite State Roundtable on the Affordable Care Act on the Exchange on NHPR and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, reconsidering Stand Your Ground. New Hampshire weather today, partly to mostly sunny and windy, highs from 50 to 55 for most of the state, around 45 north of the White Mountains. Tonight becoming partly to mostly cloudy, a chance of rain showers for most of the state. North of the White Mountains, a chance of rain or snow showers, lows near 25 in the North Country, 30 to 35 for the rest of the state. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a Granite State Roundtable on the Affordable Care Act. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477 or send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook. We hope you'll go to our page, join the conversation there. If the Affordable Care Act has affected you yet, tell us how and why. Also, what do you think its impact might be on you, your family, or your workplace in the future? Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Lisa Girton with Blue Cross Blue Shield, just before the break, you were finishing up your thoughts on a real interesting call from Karen, 36 years as a pharmacist. On the one hand, she thinks everybody should have health coverage because they otherwise they wait too long and their conditions get really bad. On the other hand, she says people who do have health coverage sometimes take advantage of that and just go to the doctor again, as we said, for a hangnail. And you were finishing up your point there.
Yeah, I agreed with Karen's point on a couple of different fronts. I do believe she's right when we talk about prevention being so critical. And that's another example of trying to make sure people are really engaged in making good decisions about their health care. So whether it's becoming engaged in managing your health or whether it's becoming engaged in becoming a medical consumer, shopping effectively for health care services when you need them, I think that those are both important things and important parts of the solution to healthcare affordability.
Okay, and here's the question then in terms of shopping, and I think I'll turn to you, maybe Lucy. This big debate here in New Hampshire about whether we should have these healthcare exchanges. This has been described as like Travelocity for healthcare, where you can really shop online. This is my health situation. This is my family. These are my needs. And New Hampshire, as you know, has sent back the money to the federal government saying, no thanks, we don't want to set up these exchanges. How is that going to affect the issue that Lisa talks about, consumers needing the information they need to shop around?
Well, I think that consumers should have the information, and I think the exchanges would have helped them access that information, because the more they are able to engage in the dialogue around what type of care do I expect for me, myself, and my family, what does it cost, where can I go to get it, the more the consumer is engaged in a potential solution here. So I think the exchanges were one step towards that. I think that consumers in New Hampshire are having to become more engaged. You're seeing on the private side high deductible plans, which means there's more out-of-pocket expenditures. What the consumers don't see is the results of the Affordable Care Act on providers, where they're having to, because of a number of provisions in the Affordable Care Act, try and figure out how can they actually reduce the costs of the care they provide yet continue to provide a high-quality care. So you see them talking about accountable care organizations. How are they going to manage the care of some of the patients that cost the system and cost everyone more than everyone else? How are they going to manage that care? How are they going to get them to where they need to go without over-testing and over-treating? How are they going to get them into the community feeling well, making use of their wellness programs so that they can be better, be healthier, and reduce the costs? It's a tough issue, but in New Hampshire, it's having to happen both because of high deductible plans and because of the payment reforms in the Affordable Care Act.
And high deductible plans are you pay a high deductible before your insurance kicks in.
Right. It means that you have to pay out of your own pocket as the consumer and the or the employee up to maybe $5,000 before your insurance kicks
in. Wow, that's a lot. Right. And you're still covered, but not very well.
You're still covered, but there's a lot of decisions. And in New Hampshire, there are a lot of providers who are able to make sure that the employees who are in high deductible plans have affordable care. There's too long in the future, and there may not be that competition for that kind of care. But still in New Hampshire, there is.
Okay. And I want to get you into this, Dr. Harker, and you, Bob Clegg. So, Dr. Harker, first onto Lucy's point that, you know, you're trying to work within the confines of this act and bring the cost of care down while still providing care. That's been a big criticism, as you know. Some people say, why is healthcare so expensive? It's those darn doctors. They're ordering tests every time you turn around.
Well, I would say, so we do have a lot of technology and medications that drive the cost of care, but I think what's ultimately driving the cost is cost shifting. We have a number of people who are uninsured, who get uncompensated care. So hospitals and doctor's offices shift then the cost onto people with insurance. So it becomes more expensive. And I did want to touch on the point of that the people use additional health care if they have the resources.
Karen, the pharmacist's
right.
Point, yes.
I've been a family doctor for 10 years, and I've never seen anyone come in for a hangnail. And I think that, I mean, people make light of it, but it's people come in for real reasons in my experience. And I'll give you an example. I have a 40-year-old logger who comes in. He's got severe arthritis in his hip. He continues to work, but he doesn't have insurance. And so if he had insurance, he'd get it fixed. But he continues to work because he needs to support his family. He's in a lot of pain, but he's pushing through. But he can't continue on that path. If he had insurance, he'd be able to get the surgery and continue to be a productive member of the New Hampshire workforce. But what he's actually starting to contemplate is, should I go on disability and stop working and get government support for me for the rest of my life because I can't afford the surgery that would actually help me continue to work as I do now. There's a real human cost to not having insurance. And the shifting of the costs around is what increases the price of healthcare. Small businesses, if their cost for premiums has continued to increase every year, and part of that is because we have more and more uninsured people. The costs get shifted to the insured, and so then the people choose to go without insurance. And that's a vicious cycle that at some point we're going to reach a point where the market collapses because everybody gets sick at some point in time. And that's why it's so important to have everybody in a system where everyone has insurance that everyone pays into.
This gets back to the mandate issue and that squeezing the balloon. You know, if you've got uninsured people coming into your office, Dr. Harker, then the insured end up picking up the cost. cost. I wanted to ask you also, Bob Clegg, about the exchanges. That has been a debate here in New Hampshire, as you know, the legislature rejecting the money that would take to set these up. I think we're one of just a few states that has done this. Is this a good idea?
Well, I think it is. What was happening was that people had no trust in the group that was pushing for the exchanges. And there was a couple of senators in particular who said that we needed them. Yet those same senators were doing everything possible to take away the benefits of large group policies by, say, the leasing employee leasing companies in the state of New Hampshire. They had gotten together with the insurance commissioner, even though the law stated that employee leasing companies are allowed to have and they're encouraged to have large group health policies for all of their clients.
I'm a little confused as to what that is.
Large group health policy means that you get a whole lot of clients together. They all become employees of the leasing company, and the insurance rate suddenly goes down because insurance for small group companies 14 and under is very expensive. When you get a large group, in this case, there were one company had over 1,000 employees. Their average age went from, because they insure all the 26-year-olds and the 25-year-olds all the way up to the 50s, their average age ended up being somewhere around 35. So there's some benefits to that.
So this would allow, you say the right approach is to allow a bunch of small businesses to pool together and act like a large group.
Well, we've always said that, and to let them survive based on what they actually their actual costs are, which is what these groups did. So one of the senators actually was pushing to stop that. He's an insurance salesperson, and what he wanted to do was break that group up so that he could go in and sell individual policies to all those small clients. And it became an issue amongst the small business people. If he's trying to make insurance cost us more now so that he benefits personally or his company does, how can we actually think that the exchange is going to do anything good for us? So there was some pressure upon a lot of the senators and a lot of the members of the House of Representatives to say, no, don't do it, because we already know that the intent isn't for our benefit. It's for the benefit of business in the state of New Hampshire. So there was no trust. That was the first problem with that whole setup. So send the money back, because we can't afford to pay more for health insurance, and that's what it looked like. As far as we were concerned, if that certain senator wanted to break everybody up so that his business would be able to sell higher cost policies, then the exchange was only going to be something that would actually harm us.
So the exchanges, the debate over the exchanges here in New Hampshire was largely a political, not based on whether this online Travelocity model is good or not?
We didn't believe that it could be good, because obviously the people pushing it were already pushing for higher rates, not better rates.
You look like you want to jump in, Lisa, on this point of the exchanges and whether New Hampshire should have gotten in on this federal grant to set them up.
Well, I think there are a couple of issues. One is the federal health care reform law will change what kind of groups can be rated on their own experience in the future. If you think about some of the associations and other groups that come together today, they do so because they believe that they can do certain things to be healthier and have lower rates than the general community-rated small group market. And post-2014, some of those things, as Senator said, will not be allowed to exist. So I think that that's sort of a one issue. In terms of the exchange here in New Hampshire, I think the question really is, does the state want to take control in designing what kind of exchange we will have, or do we want to default to the federal exchange? Because that's
what
what the law requires. And I do understand there were other issues at play, and I think there were some political issues at play. If people don't fundamentally believe in the federal health care reform law, then I can understand why they wouldn't want to do things here at the state level that enable it or support it. But I think the real question is, will we have a state-created exchange or a federal default exchange?
And I had heard from some people when we did a whole program on this, Lisa, that some people said it doesn't really matter, because even if we set up our own New Hampshire exchange, the feds are going to tell us how it needs to run. So they were saying it doesn't really matter if it has a New Hampshire stamp on it or not. What do you think about that?
Well, I think there's some truth to that. Whichever path we take, there will be a combination of some federal direction and some state direction. A great example is the essential health benefits. Health and Human Services has actually decided that the states can define those for themselves. So, I think there's some truth to that belief that under any set of circumstances, it will actually be a dual federal and state decision that drives it.
All right, let's take some calls again. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Carol is waiting in Bedford. Hi, Carol. Thanks for hanging on. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. I wanted to talk about the pre-existing condition and how it affected me personally. 3 years ago, my husband lost his job, and we went on COBRA. When COBRA ran out, we had to try to find an individual health care plan. Now, we were 62 at the time, and I called around to the three insurance companies in New Hampshire. All three said to me that because I had had surgery in the last 3 years, which was a hip replacement, I didn't have cancer, I didn't have diabetes, I didn't have heart disease, but they told me that that excluded me for life. In other words, they would not insure me ever under an individual plan. And those were the scariest words I have ever heard in my life. So this, the Affordable Health Care Act that will basically eliminate that. They will not allow insurance companies to have pre-existing conditions as part of, you know, the fact what they factor in. I think is critical to the health of this country.
Well, and Carol, here's a question for you. And the polls, anyway, show that many Americans feel the way you do. They like the requirements that people can't be excluded for various reasons. They like the extension of health coverage to young adults up to age 26. But then you ask them about the mandate, which the Obama administration says is key to paying for those requirements. And people say, nah, I'm a little uncomfortable with the mandate. I wonder how you feel about it.
Well, I think the mandate is critical. And as a 63-year-old person, our premiums, once we finally were able to get a coverage, because we started our own business, we were able to get an individual plan, our premiums were $1,834 a month, and that was with a $5,000 a year deductible. So we paid a lot more because we were 60. We were in our 60s. Once you turn 60, it really goes up. And, yeah, I think young people need to be insured. And I think if we all pay into it, maybe we would all pay less. You know,
okay.
So I do think it's critical that everyone pays.
Carol, thanks a lot for the call. What do you think, Dr. Harker?
I really appreciate Carol's call. I think it brings up a very important point, and it reminds me of a child who would be unfortunate enough to get a cancer but lucky enough to survive, and the reward for surviving their cancer is that they would be uninsurable for the rest of their life. And it really points out that there's a big issue with this issue with pre-existing conditions, and the Affordable Care Act really fixes that so that people throughout the continuum of their life can get the type of care that they need. And I really don't think I don't think as a society we want to go back to those days where people can be denied because of an experience they've had.
Bob Clegg, jump in, and then I got a question for Lucy and Lisa. Go ahead.
There's two things about pre-existing condition. One is the person who, as you described, would have cancer and then be so-called uninsurable. The real problem that business sees is the one who comes into the office after being diagnosed and says, okay, now I want to buy insurance. That's the one where a lot of us believe that there should be a waiting period. You could have been insured, but you chose not to until you got sick. And that's because the government interfered and said, when you get sick and you walk in and you want insurance, you have to get it. So if we're going to say pre-existing condition and you want to buy insurance, but it's not because suddenly you've been diagnosed, I'll agree with you. But to tell somebody that they now have to take you after all those years you decided not to be part of the system, yet now you want to take advantage of the system, I have a problem because that's what I and many other businesses are paying the cost of.
Is that an argument, though, Bob, for a mandate? If everybody's in the pool, then those costs aren't
a
problem.
No, I think if you choose not to be covered and you suddenly have a catastrophic illness, well, you knew what your chances were. You took the gamble. I didn't take the gamble. You took the gamble.
I think that's a very interesting point because the question in working with providers, the providers firmly believe that if someone walks in their door, whether they're a nonprofit hospital or a private physician group, they will treat the patient who walks in the door. And what they want to make sure is that the burden of the expectations that people have to be treated and to get the excellent care that's provided in New Hampshire is not all of a sudden shifted completely onto the provider at some point in the future. So the question is, how do we share that burden, and what kind of incentives do we have to make sure that it's not all shifted to the employer, it's not all shifted to the people who pay and choose to get insurance, but at the same time, the providers know what to expect when they're trying to run a business and provide care.
Well, and Lisa, again, with Blue Cross Blue Shield, you know, on this insurance mandate, it's been said that the insurance industry's nightmare is that the Supreme Court strikes down the mandate but says that other coverage provisions of the law can still stand. Do you feel that way? Is that the insurance industry's nightmare?
Yes, I think it is. And it really gets back to the basic premise that makes health insurance work, and that is healthy people and sick people in the pool together, sharing the premium, sharing the costs. And the reality is, some years, if you're very lucky, you'll pay a lot of premium in and you'll take absolutely nothing out. But on the other end of the spectrum, there are people whose healthcare expenses will be hundreds or thousands of times the premium they paid in. That balance is so critical. And the real risk to having an imbalance of the mandate and the pre-existing condition exclusion is that we mess that up and get to the point where nobody can afford to buy insurance and we create a vicious cycle.
Well, that's what happened in New Hampshire and about 8 other states, right, Lisa, where they passed these requirements. And I think Bob Clegg talked about them earlier. You have to cover this, you have to cover this, you have to cover this. But there's no mandate enlarging that pool. And so from my understanding of the reading of the history of this, after all those requirements were passed, insurers sort of, you know, flew out of the state quickly, and those who remained raised premiums.
Right, and there are still some states operating that way today. If you look at the cost of individual insurance in New York, even in Maine, you can see what happens over time when people wait to buy insurance until they need it. So I agree with what the doctor said about it being very important to make sure that people aren't left out in the cold and unable to get some kind of coverage. But that balance is so critical, and you're right, a worst case scenario is the law stands minus the individual mandate.
And I know, Dr. Harker, you have spoken in favor of the mandate, but looking at the polls this morning, a lot of Americans are really uncomfortable with this. A lot of people, depending on which poll you look at, it's at least half. They say, I don't like this.
I think part of it is it's presented to people in a simplistic way, and people don't like to be told what to do. When people come into my office, if they're doing a unhealthy behavior or not exercising and I ask them to exercise, they're not going to like it to be told what to do. But if I work with them and understand their values and what's important to them, then I can come to a better solution. And I think if we can focus on that, the benefits of insurance, then people might come around to that.
All right. Well, more of your calls after a short break. Our number, 1-800-892-6477.
Today on Word of Mouth, your brain on food. Science pokes a hole in the notion of food addiction. Yes, some snacks do stimulate our reward systems, but may not necessarily call for an intervention. And applying best practices of dog ownership to training managers. I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth heals for new ideas today at noon and again at 9 on NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Franklin Pierce University, a leader in adult education, offering degrees from associate to doctorate. New term begins April 25th and May 31st. Information at franklinpierce.edu. And Nathan Wexler and Company, CPAs and business advisors, serving entrepreneurial clients who share a passion for competency, integrity, and community enrichment, 224-5357. Good morning, it's 940. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we sit down with New Hampshire U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen, and you can email us your questions for Senator Shaheen before the program at exchange@nhpr.org, and be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, it's a Granite State roundtable on the Affordable Care Act, heard by the U.S. Supreme Court last week, in the news a lot lately. Our number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. www.thepreexistingcondition.org. And all of you, I want to share a couple emails with you. Here's one from Rich, who says, I have an easy constitutional fix to the individual mandate that we were talking about before. Give people a choice, but with consequences. If a person that is not otherwise covered buys health insurance, they will get a tax credit of up to 25% of the cost. If they choose not to purchase insurance, they will pay a tax of 5% of their adjusted income that will go into an uncompensated care account that the feds would distribute on a proportional basis to each state to reimburse hospitals for their uncompensated care. Since Congress can impose taxes, this is a constitutional process. Rich, thanks a lot for that thought. And all of you, I think Lucy, you first, and maybe Bob.
Rich, that's a very interesting thought, and I think it's one that is starting to take hold in discussions of other ways to fund the problem. In fact, I think it right now in Congress there's a proposal to have a tax credit for those who do choose to purchase insurance, which in fact the tax credit is higher than the penalty you'd pay under the Affordable Care Act if you didn't purchase it. So it's interesting the way you have posed it to solve a constitutional problem, and I hearken back to what the doctor said about the fact that some of this issue is how it's phrased to people and how do we get people vested in the outcome to understand that contributing to a pool to support the costs that are otherwise shifted to you anyway are very important. How do you get people to purchase insurance to make sure that they are not the cost that everybody else is assuming? And that's a really good suggestion. That's earlier I said in June we may have an answer, but we won't have the answer. So I think you are starting to continue the discussion in a very important way.
Well, and it's been said, Bob Clegg, that the fines that people would pay under the Affordable Care Act, some have said they're too low. You know, it'd be easier for a lot of people to pay the fine than to buy insurance.
Well, obviously, a lot of people think that it's cheaper to pay the fine if you've got a good health plan for your employees today. In some cases, it would be. But I agree that it should be a tax deduction because when we allow the businesses and people to take a tax deduction, it means that they're not going to fall onto either Medicaid or some other welfare in their local community based on a catastrophic illness, because we all know if you don't have insurance, you wait till the last minute, and then sometimes it's too late, and sometimes the cost of repairing your body is extraordinary. So having everybody be part of the system is the way it was always designed, and I think most businesses advocate that. So he's right. Let's make it easier for people to participate, give them the tax credit, and let's see what happens.
You know, one more question for you, Bob Clegg, because I know you follow the legislature. We talked about the mandate. I had heard that New Hampshire passed a law saying that no Granite Stater could be required to buy a product and no Granite Stater would be required to pay a fine for not purchasing that product. Did that bill become law? Is that on the books? Does that have any force?
I actually think it's in the Senate now and it would have force, but I'm not sure that we could stop the federal government from attaching any refund that we had coming back to us. So I think it's empty in that case.
What do you think about that, Lisa? I'm curious from the insurance end. This New Hampshire possible law saying, okay, federal government, you can't make any Granite Stater do this.
Well, I'm not sure I can add anything to what the senator said there. I mean, there will always be the question of what kind of authority could we have for creating such a requirement here over what the federal government will mandate. So
who's really in charge here, the federal government or the state government?
Exactly.
Right. All right. Well, thank you for that email, Rich. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's another email. This is from Sienna in Tamworth. My partner and I just moved from Massachusetts to New Hampshire. We can't afford to buy individual health insurance, and especially since we're young and healthy, so paying $500 or $600 a month for the two of us for care we rarely use is ridiculous. In Massachusetts, we were covered at a rate we could afford, and we and our parents didn't have to worry about it because of the individual mandate and the affordable options for people up to 300% of the poverty level. Now we're worried about what we're going to do if one of us gets sick. So, Dr. Harker, this is the young, healthy people who don't get sick that often, and these folks are saying, you know, we're not going to use it, so it's silly to spend that much money per month. I wonder if you hear that from your patients.
Not so much, really. I mean, I think she saw both sides of that coin. She said, you know, we're not going to use it that much, but what if we get sick? What are we going to do? And that's what insurance is there for. People want insurance to be there when they need it. And the exchanges would have actually helped with her with that because it would have had an open marketplace. People would have been able to look at that, the benefit packages, the cost of that, and she would have been able to know what option would be best for her. And actually, there probably would have been more affordable insurance options because the market would have been more open.
These are the exchanges that we talked about yes. earlier, the comparison shopping. Are these, does anybody know, maybe you, Lucy, are these up and running in other states? They're not required until 2014.
Well, Massachusetts is a model where they have an exchange up and
right.
running. So
they've had that for a long time.
They've had that for a long time. Other states are much further along than New Hampshire in trying to plan for the exchange. As we know, New Hampshire's rejected the money, so it would be a federal requirement. I do want to also bring up a point, which is that what we haven't discussed yet today is Medicaid, which is the fact that there's a big issue with Medicaid going on because it is a government funded program, and in 2014, it is supposed to expand to add, I've heard, somewhere between 60 to 70,000 New Hampshire individuals who wouldn't otherwise have been eligible. And that is also at the Supreme Court. We've had a number of battles about Medicaid here. The mental health system is in front of the federal court concerning Medicaid individuals and others accessible to mental health care. The hospitals have gone to the federal court to challenge the fact that they aren't getting uncompensated care payments anymore, and their Medicaid rates have been reduced significantly. So we do have in New Hampshire a real issue that we're going to have to address about how to care for the people who really have no access to purchase insurance.
Yeah, that's another point that came up during these Supreme Court hearings, is this dramatic expansion of Medicaid to cover more folks. Is that okay or not? Because it costs the state money, too. It doesn't just cost the federal government money.
Right.
It's a
so,
federal,
and that was
program.
That was the other partner solution to the mandate to for the insurance companies and for the providers, which is if the providers agreed to have their rates reduced, as they did under Medicare in the Affordable Care Act, and the insurance companies agreed to have these expanded benefits, one of the solutions was to get more people in the pool for insurance, either government insurance or private insurance, so that more people, there's payment for more of the services provided.
Okay, super quick, Dr. Harker, we hear already that Medicaid patients have a hard time finding docs that will take them, given the reimbursement rates are so low. Are there enough doctors out there to take care of a greatly expanded pool?
I think there are, and I think one of the problems is that the amount of reimbursement through Medicaid is really low, so a number of practitioners limit their Medicaid practice.
Sure.
Under the Affordable Care Act in 2013 and 2014, Medicaid will match the 100% of Medicare reimbursement rate. So instead of being around 50 or 60% of what they would get for a Medicare patient, with Medicaid, they'll get 100% of what they should get for delivering their services.
Wow, that's huge.
So that's a big difference. And I think doctors will open up their practices. We'll see more patients because of this coverage issue.
Although, how's the federal government going to pay for that? That's another issue, right? I mean, that might blow a hole in
the debt and deficit. The thing we haven't talked about is on the other end, we're working on decreasing costs. The Affordable Care Act has a Medicare Shared Savings Program that's created accountable care organizations where different hospitals are partnering with numbers of doctor practices. And I've seen more energy and excitement about this piece of it so that they can decrease the amount of money that they're spending on healthcare, and actually to decrease utilization for people who use the emergency room for primary care, for people who get readmitted to the hospital. Within 30 days of a heart failure admission or a chronic lung disease admission. And so there's a lot of energy across the state. Dartmouth is already taking advantage of this through the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Center for Innovation grant. And the whole state's excited about that.
Let's take another call. And this is Beth in Bedford. Hi, Beth. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is for the person who represents the small business in New Hampshire. You talked about having government stay out of your business, and my husband's a small business owner of about 30 engineers, and he constantly says, I want government to take this over. I don't want to be responsible for this. He's always having to make decisions. Do I hire young people who will bring our insurance costs down? He wants everyone to be covered, of course, but the question is, why aren't more small business owners proponents of having a more universal plan where everyone is covered?
Okay. Thanks a lot for that call, Beth. What do you think, Bob Clegg?
Well, I think that most small businesses don't want government telling them where they can locate their business, how many people they can hire. what kind of vehicles they can drive or what kind of engineering projects they can do, any more than they want them to tell them what insurance programs they should have. Most small businesses I know have insurance programs, even people who are self-employed. So they don't feel that they need government to intrude. Every time government comes up with one more mandate or one more area where they think that they should be in control, it just leads to the next one. There's a never end. I think that if we leave people alone and let them do the right thing, they will. And I'm sorry your husband finds it really tough, but he could hire a benefits management company and they would do all the work for him finding the lowest cost health insurance program for all of his employees. He doesn't have to do it himself.
I just want to jump in. I think what – Beth, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I think you raise a really good point, which is why is this we have set up a structure where the employer is the one who is responsible for assisting in securing coverage. And, you know, there are many people who have suggested that your point is correct, which is why should the employer be the one who has this burden? Perhaps there could be a different pool where the funding for a more universal coverage does not come from the employer's pocketbook, but it comes from some other solution. And that may be something that's explored in the future, which is how do you make sure people get coverage and not have it necessarily come from the employer plan, which is the model we have right now.
Beth, thanks for that call. And here's an email from someone who didn't want her name used. She says, I'm unemployed, 48 years old, and my coverage under COBRA is temporary. That's the coverage that continues after you get laid off. Faced with the loss of this rather threadbare safety net, I started shopping for a policy of my own. I asked Anthem for a quote. The agent on the phone asked for a list of my current medications, then turned me down. The pre-existing conditions part of the Affordable Care Act is not yet in force. There is no insurance exchange in New Hampshire to make individual coverage affordable. Without health insurance, I can't afford to go to the doctor when I get sick, nor to buy medicine. She says, I am so frightened by the thought of living uninsured that the Supreme Court hearings actually made me sick. Add health care panic to my list of pre-existing conditions. Thanks for that email. Wow, health care panic. What do you think, Lisa? Pre-existing conditions. Right now, she can still be rejected.
That's true. And I hope she's getting counsel to be aware that there is a high-risk pool in New Hampshire that all insurers actually pay a subsidy into, so that if someone is unable to purchase a commercial individual product because of a pre-existing condition, they then qualify for that pool. I actually sit on the board of that pool, and it's been very successful.
Is it super expensive because people are quote-unquote high risk?
Well, it's sort of indexed to the small group market, so it is a little bit more expensive. However, that's a direct reflection of those costs for the people who are in it. And I think, you know, that's back to that general principle of we're talking about people who already know that they're going to be consuming services. So hopefully she has information on that. If she doesn't, I would encourage her to call us back and we can help and make sure that she has some options.
I thought that was really compelling the way she said healthcare panic as a pre-existing condition, Dr. Harker. No matter how you feel about this bill, everybody's kind of nervous about what's going to happen next. I wonder if you're hearing that from your patients.
Absolutely. This is the human toll and all of this debate around how we're going to pay for the health care that everyone needs to get. You know, people are terrified of their health care bills. And, you know, health care bills is the number one among the top reasons for bankruptcy in this country. And think about it. Like, when you're sick, you're at your most vulnerable point, and you have to be worried about so many other things, about losing your home, losing things that are very important to you, declaring bankruptcy because there's not a system in place to help you.
You know, as we wrap up, I want to ask you all a question. It's a big one, and Bob Clegg, I'll turn to you first. The one thing that everybody agrees upon in this debate is that healthcare is too expensive, and we've all talked about businesses struggling to cover their workers. Just real briefly, Bob, what do you think the answer is to that problem, if not through the Affordable Care Act?
I think the answer is, as I said in the beginning, I think that those people who choose not to be insured need to be held accountable when suddenly something happens. And I think that a lot of those people do have assets that we should go and attach and get reimbursed for the care that we have to give them. I think that the idea that government is the answer to everything is wrong. I think if we allow the health insurers and the businesses to work together, I think we'll find the solution. But we can't find a solution if all you have to do is wait until you're sick and then demand to be taken care of at somebody else's expense.
I think everybody agrees at least on that part for sure. What do you think, Dr. Harker?
I think holding people accountable to be individually responsible for their own health is important. But where do you draw the line? If someone comes in with an appendicitis, should we say, well, you don't have any assets that we could get, so we're not going to fix your appendicitis? I don't think that's real, and I don't think that anyone's asking government to fix all of our problems. I think that as a community of people, we're saying this would bring some rationality to it. This would bring some stability to the system so that that person who does have an emergency can get the type of care that they need.
Yeah, boy, and huge questions, and I wish we could all talk for another hour. Lisa, I guess I would close by asking you, you know, what do you hope happens out of this Supreme Court situation?
Well, you know, I think that if we can keep our focus on improving the quality and the safety of our health care, it's so important to remember that the cost of health insurance is directly tied to the underlying cost of health care. And so however this turns out, we've got to keep our focus on the positive things we can do to take waste out of the system, to improve its efficiency and its effectiveness. And so wherever that decision goes at the end of June, we can't forget that.
Okay, final thoughts from you, Lucy Hodder.
I just hope we in New Hampshire remember that we have a special population and a special group of providers, and we should look at, we know these people, there are 50,000 people without insurance. We can do something here and stop focusing on just moral issues that are not effective around health care. Let's look at really what the problem is and how we can pool together to solve it and reduce costs and improve access. We have the ability in New Hampshire to do it a New Hampshire way, and I think we should keep asking the tough questions and figuring out how to do that.
Okay, well, I want to thank all of you for making the time for me this morning. Thanks a lot for being here.
Thank you.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Join our page to continue the conversation and learn more about what we're doing every day. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.